Come on, Joel.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Don't be scared to get hit.
Hey now, boys and girls, welcome in to another episode of the Bucknologists here on KealTownUSA.com. Show 31. I am your host, AJ Strong. As always with me, the one and only Rocket Backhander.
I am that weird stain on the carpet that your dad is hiding from your mom. Don't tell her. He'll give you $5.
Hey now, hockey jerk, what say you?
Show number 31 as in Auntie Naomi, right?
Oh, we're going to get to that. Woo! Hey, sorry we missed you last week, but we're going to make up for it this time. This one might run a scotch long, just a scotch. Right now, the Sharks have amassed themselves a 10-6 record, good for 20 points. They've climbed to third in the Pacific Division, but just 2 points out from taking over second. However, Calgary and Vancouver are also sitting at 20, making the game in hand over Calgary and the two games in hand over Vancouver kind of a big deal. However, the Sharks have won 4 of their last 5 and gone 6-1 over their last 7. Maybe the division is finally starting to correct itself. Although it's hard to say that with a straight face while Vegas is still in the top 3. So, since we last left you, the Sharks did play 4 games. Versus Anaheim, they win in overtime 2-1. Versus the Lightning, a horrible 5-1 loss. Versus the Canucks, they make up for it a little bit with a 5-0 shutout. And the last game, the Sharks have played 2-1 victory versus LA, the dreaded LA Kings. So, of course, we start first versus Anaheim. Vlasic and Martin are both out. If you remember, Vlasic did take a nasty hit and had to go through concussion protocol there. So, Dylan answers the bell, gets bumped up to the second pairing. DeMello obviously fills the final spot there. And we get, who's this? I heard this guy's name. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Barkley Goodrow? I'm not sure. I haven't said that name a whole hell of a lot, so I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. But Barkley Goodrow gets into the lineup in place of Carpenter, who wasn't impressing PDB much. The Ducks came into this one with a lot of injuries. You got Bieksa, Getzlaf, Eves, what have you. So, Rocket, Sharks get a 2-1 overtime victory out of this one. Tell us what you saw.
I'm trying to remember if I saw this one or if this was one that I had to try to see later. If I remember correctly, Goodrow actually got a couple of things done in this game, which I was like, oh, wow, maybe now he's out of Pete's doghouse. Doesn't really look like it, though. Barkley Goodrow can do no right. I don't know what he could possibly do to be in any more good graces. He's not doing anything wrong. So I'm just like, at this point in time, I think it's just personal preference. Maybe he has like stinky feet or something. I don't know. I really am curious.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, I have seen him, and I know, Rocket, you have too, seen him outside Sharks eyes after a practice. And, you know, the bottom part of his facial hair, it does almost connect to his chest hair. So I wonder if that creeps out Peter DeBoer a little
that
bit.
That is so true. I can't. It's true.
You guys are getting way too personal here.
go way, way, way inside the team.
There you go. Yeah, Goodrow did get a helper on Ward's game-tying goal in this one with about 8 minutes left in the third. But the story of this game, for me anyway, was the shootout. Because this was a very tight game, had that playoff feel. I know it's a cliche thing to say, but it had the playoff feel. But the thing I want to go into, the Sharks first 3 shooters in the shootout, because it went that far, kids. Joe Pavelski, of course. Logan Couture, absolutely. Number 3, Tim Heed? Really? Okay, but it goes to 7 rounds, and Jonas Donskoy with the dangle, which begs the question, jerk, why is Donskoy not shooting third in that situation?
Well, that's what I'm wondering myself, especially
like
when
Heed and LeBanc before Donskoy.
Right. Well, when, especially when you consider that Donskoy is known, especially in Finland, when he was on Karpat, for being a shootout specialist.
Right. And I said even in 900 hockey that, you know, he dangles goalies until they're spent.
Exactly. And I thought the same thing for you. Like, LeBanc makes sense because he is more of a shooter, but I saw Heed and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, you don't take shootout attempts from the blue line with a slapper. What are you doing?
Right. And then, of course, you know, they follow up Heed with Burns, who, you know, I mean, insert, you know, women's prison joke here about not being able to score. But I mean, Burns just hasn't been able to find the back of the net all season. So, and of course, we would be remiss if we didn't point out that the Sharks again played another game where they could not score a power play goal. They go 0-3 with the man advantage, but continuing to have the perfect PK going 1-for-1.
I hear the drums in the distance.
I don't know. I'm telling you. Oh, man, we're going to get Indian chants going soon enough. I mean, it's we got to – you have the rain dance. We're going to do the Sharks power play dance soon enough.
Maybe we could get a couple of the hippies from Santa Cruz to start a drum circle.
Right? I'll take that. I mean, I'm going to start showing up to Sharks game in, like, full-blown teal headdress. Power play, power – I mean, something.
Yeah.
I'm sure I can get something. Right. I can get section 209 into that. Come on, you know I can. So we move on to Tampa Bay. I mean, the hottest team in the East, arguably the hottest team in the NHL as it stands right now. And the Sharks really, I mean, if you're going to stink up the ice, I mean, just, you know, if you're going to, what is it? If you're going to eat ice, eat it hard, man. The Sharks gave up 9 points to Tampa's top line alone. They allowed 3 goals in the second period. Dell ends up replacing Joner to start the third. And again, Sharks 0-for-2 on the power play, but I don't think a power play goal is going to mean a whole lot in this one. 3-for-4 on the PK. And at that point, though, the goal allowed on the PK was basically a throwaway because the Sharks were pressing, already being down by 3. But they did go 66% in the dot. But they just had a lot of trouble maintaining possession. I will give that up to the Sharks this season. Right now, as it stands, they are second in the NHL in the circle, which is a clear, clear difference from last season. But versus the Lightning Rocket, I don't know if it was a possession thing or if it was a thing just like Tampa proving, again, like Pittsburgh in the final, speed kills. And right now the Sharks have no answer for it.
It's not just the Sharks, though. Like, Tampa came through, and they did the California sweep. And they swept the Ducks and the Kings on a back-to-back, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. So it's not Sharks. I mean, Sharks have their own problems that they need to work through. But Tampa Bay Lightning is a whole other category of juggernaut. And I think if you would put up this Tampa Bay lineup with last year's Pittsburgh Penguins, Tampa would have spanked them, too. That's how much, like, just everything Tampa is that nobody else is touching this year. The only thing that I will look forward to is when Tampa plays Vegas in January and Vegas beats them. I have a feeling it'll happen. And it's not going to make any sense. I just think that'll happen.
I don't know. I hear you talking about Tampa spanking Pittsburgh. Oh, keep talking.
Spank them harder, Daddy. Spank them harder.
That's right. You know, again, I point out the Sharks won 2 out of 3 faceoffs in this one, Jerk. But just could not maintain possession. I mean, how do you beat the Lightning with this Shark squad?
Well, unfortunately, you don't, because this Lightning team.
Okay, then.
Yeah, well, this Lightning team, they have, you know, obviously they have a lot of young players. I believe their entire top line is under the age of 28, which is always good. And, you know, they've got really mobile defensemen. You know, Mikhail Sergachev has really come into his own, and then obviously Victor Hedman and Anton Strahlman and even Dan Girardi are all huge pieces. The Lightning are a really good team top to bottom, and you know, I'm on record as saying that how they're playing this year is how I expected them to play last year because of how well they played in the playoffs 2 years ago, and I stand by it to this day that Tampa Bay should have beat Pittsburgh in the Eastern Conference Final 2 years ago, but you know this.
You think Tampa should have kept Bishop?
No, I do not. I think Andre Vasilevsky's really come into his own as a starting goalie, despite the fact that he did have a lot of haters, especially when he did have to come in for Bishop. But he's begun to prove a lot of them, including myself, wrong. So I think they made the right choice there, moving on from Ben Bishop.
All right. And I just move on. The one thing I will give Tampa Bay is probably they are the team that gives announcers the most fits when you look at the names on the back of these jerseys. There's some
good ones. That's a fair point.
Some good ones. Rock, what did you see in this Tampa game?
I saw Tampa just dominating and owning. This was a tough one to look at to be able to tell whose responsibility was what insofar as what went wrong. In games like this, it's really tough because you want to rail on the losing team for losing it all, and it's all solely their fault. I don't think that that is the case in this game, just because of, like, you know, Jerk said, Tampa, their top line's under 28. They're young, they're fast, they have a huge amount of talent and a lot of consonants and vowels, and Sharks don't. And but that's like this Sharks lineup was not built specifically to beat Tampa, and I think the only way you're going to find something that's going to beat Tampa is a line that's specifically built to beat this team. So you kind of have to take out a lot of, well, they did this wrong and they did that wrong and yada yada yada, because it was against Tampa. The things that I didn't like in this game, the absolute chaos. Like somebody just, they ate like a Taco Bell special of chaos and disruption, and just let it grumble in their stomach, and somewhere in the locker room just let out this big L stinky fart of confusion and misdirection and poor communication. And everybody on the Sharks bench just inhaled that big green, toxic, nasty butt cloud. And they skated out onto the ice under this weird chemical influence. So they looked doubly bad. They looked bad on their own, and they looked bad because they were playing against Tampa. Well, go ahead.
I just want to bring up what you said earlier, how they swept the whole California swing. You know, like you said, the best team in the Pacific Division, the LA Kings, were not able to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. And the LA Kings have been firing on all cylinders this year, which, A, really goes to show you how good Tampa Bay is, but B, like Rocket said, also shows how out of it the Sharks were on this night. I mean, you know, they were letting Kucherov, Stamkos, and Nemestikov just run around, and I could be wrong on this, but I believe that line combined for at least 4 of those 5 goals.
Well, the thing that really frustrated the heck out of me was at one point the San Jose Sharks bench was very confused as to how many men were actually on the ice, who was completing their shifts and who still was out there on a shift, and just ended up with 4 dudes on the ice. And guess what? Tampa scored. That was frustrating. Very frustrating. I'm very glad I was not in the locker room to hear the level of screaming and yelling that occurred after that game.
This loss brought to you by Del Taco. Yeah, this is a weird one, man. Like, you know, because Jonas Donskoy scores 25 seconds in, and then everything went out the window. So we don't expect the Sharks to go 82-0.
No,
I mean, there might be the what. However, they're going to be stinkers, boys and girls. We've seen it time and time again. You go back. A big stinker that everybody points to a couple seasons ago when the Sharks went to the final was just getting absolutely demolished by the Winnipeg Jets just after New Year's. Mm-hmm. And it was fugly, people, I'm not going to lie. And every once in a while, you're going to lay a stinker. So hopefully this is...
Was that a 10-2? Was that the 10-2 game?
I don't believe it was 10-2, but it was a crap game.
Yeah, it was... I remember that game very specifically. That was the end of the really crappy beginning to that season. So
yeah, it was bad. So with that, the Sharks turn around and host the Vancouver Canucks, and pick up a 5-1 win. Now, as nice as that sounds, like, oh, what a great, fantastic bounce back and blah, blah, blah. Kids, as ugly as that loss to Tampa Bay was, this was an ugly win. Dell gets a large, large portion of the kudos here, getting just his second career shutout in a very ugly win. I mean, the Canucks got 41 shots on goal in this, largely controlled the possession in this one. That stellar, amazing Sharks power play went 0-for-4. However, PK went 5-for-5. So again, PK looking great, power play, DOA, MIA, pick your, you know, abbreviation. The weird one in this, though, the Sharks score 3 shorthanded goals, which just gives you an idea of how bizarre this ugly win was. 2 of them were by Tierney, and 1 of Tierney's was on a penalty shot. You figured that out. And then to add insult to injury on how ugly this was, Timo Meier getting a maximum fine after this one for trying to make Delzato better looking by hitting him in the chin with the butt end of his stick. The maximum fine, I mean, less than $2,500. I mean, that's probably half of what the rookie dinner was at the beginning of the year.
It's not about the financial amount, though.
I know, it's about getting those names in the book.
Yeah.
There are a few things about this game that I don't like. And
Why don't you tell the people, jerk?
And in keeping with my regular shtick of not wanting the Sharks to have anything handed to them, I, for one, think that just a fine on Timo Meier, I think was not enough. When the league talks about eliminating plays like the one where he butt-ended Delzato, and then they don't give him a fine, I'm sorry, but especially a young player like Timo Meier, sometimes you need to make an example out of some people. And I think a 1-game suspension probably would have been the better route to go on that case. Secondly,
Let me ask you a question. Doesn't Timo have a little bit of a reputation from the AHL level?
He does. He does. Yeah, and this was something I've said all season long, is that he has got a tendency to be a little retaliatory. Mm-hmm. And this was something that I was nervous about. I do not think that this would have warranted a 1-game suspension, though, just the way that the player safety rolls, because he didn't have any fines. The next time, it probably will go for a 1 or 2-game suspension.
And normally I would agree with you, but I feel like because, you know, player safety is cracking down on all of these flagrant slashes, I thought for sure that we would have seen an example made out of him, if that makes sense.
I think that he didn't have an example made out of him for getting fined. I think it was unfortunate that he made the contact that he did. I do not think that he meant to pop him in the face. I think it was a high chest push and he just got him with a stick. Because sure. I've never actually seen Timo hit somebody in the face. Like, he'll turn around and he'll push you across the shoulders with a stick. I've seen him do that a couple times, but I've never seen him like drop the gloves and get dirty and try to cut somebody's ear off with a skate. So like for people out there who want to make it more dramatic than it is, and is like, oh, he hit him in the stick, intentional. Sorry, you guys are wrong. And you're dumb if you think that somebody on an NHL team is going to do something like that on purpose. And I think the only thing that Timo needs to do is to buckle down on his retaliatory tendencies. That's it.
Long story short, Timo Meier's chances at the Lady Bing have plummeted. That's what we're trying to say, people.
Right. But before I forget to, the second thing that I really don't like about this game was Chris Tierney's penalty shot. Now, the rule book says that a penalty shot may be awarded if the offensive player's chances at getting a shot off are impeded. Now, if you watch the tape, Chris Tierney was the victim of the aforementioned flagrant slash in the neutral zone, and then had a very long breakaway right up Main Street and hit it off the crossbar. Now, I'm not an NHL referee, but how you don't get a better chance than that, I'm not entirely sure. And I think, if anything, it should have been a 2-minute slash, and that's it. I think the penalty shot call was a bad call in terms of the referees.
Yeah, but and see, it's funny you say that, because now just go back just, you know, a couple weeks, and let's remind everybody that one of the biggest cliches into hockey is they sit there and go, well, you know, sometimes there's going to be a bad call that goes your way, sometimes a bad call that goes their way, and at the end of the day, they all kind of even out, blah, blah, blah. So it's funny you talk about that with the referees and the whole penalty shot thing when rewind the clock just a couple weeks ago and the Sharks play Boston and Khudobin literally knocks his own net off the mooring. There's less than 2 minutes left. Sharks are on a power play. If you look up in the rule book, the Sharks should have been granted a penalty shot in that game. So, I mean, it's like literally this is one of those things where it's like, holy crap, maybe sometimes they do even out.
The universe has reset.
Right? So, you know, it's funny you point that out. But so, of course, it's going to remind me about Khudobin knocking off that net and the Sharks not getting a penalty shot. So, I digress. Let's move on to down south versus the Los Angeles Kings, number one team in the Pac-Div. Oh boy, the line blender for the Sharks went into overdrive in this one, Rocket. I mean, this is the first time that we've seen in, I want to say, what, three seasons that the Joes were actually split up on the lines. I mean, this, I guess that's what you do. That there's your, I don't know, combination to beat LA?
I don't know. I don't think there is a combination. I think that this was another one of those things where Pete's foot on the blender pedal is like he's just gonna break all the buttons off. You know what I mean? It just they shouldn't even announce combinations because the combination they start with is not gonna be the combination that they end with, or will even run another shift with after that one.
True that.
It's I think just inserts player A, player B, player C, line two, player A, player B, player C, line three, you know, and then just have player A as a particular number of these players. Player B could be any combination of these players. Player C, it's just to choose your own adventure insofar as when they list the combinations.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, yo, it's magic. It's to find mismatches. It's to get different combinations for different players.
Well, I think what we also saw is that it was also a way to lighten Joe Thornton's ice time.
Well, yeah, but that's going to happen. I mean, you look at a franchise with any kind of aging cornerstone, like the Sedin twins in Vancouver. They're not, you know, the powerhouse kids that they once were. And so, you know, they do have a lot of younger talent, hi Bo, on that team. And, you know, the Sedins have taken sort of a backup role to their primary prowess that used to be out there. And, you know, the Joes are sort of running in the same, fading into the background, but still being supportive. Pavelski, not so much as Thornton, but it's happening. You know, this is what we thought would happen. It's happening.
Well, and over the course of these last couple of games that we've been talking about, it's funny that since the beginning of the season, it was a lot of talk that, oh, the Sharks are just, you know, they're just a two-line team, and where's contributions from the third and fourth guy, you know, third and fourth lines? And then you look at it, and this one, Tierney picks up two goals, both, I mean, again, weird game, but hey, a goal's a goal, he picks up two, Ward gets an assist. I mean, obviously that's the Vancouver game, but Ward gets an assist in that one. And then in this one, Ward with a goal, Goodrow with an assist. I mean, we are starting to see contributions, Hockey Jerk, from the bottom six. And funny how all those contributions started to occur once the magic hashtag legend of Barkley Goodrow has come up to make a significant impact.
I am with you 100%. I think contribution from the lower lines, I think it is huge. It's not even a matter of whether or not I think it. It's the truth. Contribution from your bottom lines will make you a Stanley Cup team. Now, to be a jerk, Chris Tierney's two goals, one was an empty net, one was a weak penalty shot. Ward's goal was a deflection off his foot. So they are
goal's goal, a goal, man.
that's where I'm going. Is they a goal is a goal. They lucked themselves into these goals, but like you said, a goal is a goal nonetheless. And you know, whether you rip it top cheddar or it goes off of your toe, off the goalie's mask and in, you know, the fact that you're on the score sheet obviously puts you in a pumped up mood. And I'm hoping that, like you said, the bottom six has been playing so well lately that I'm hoping that they just keep pouring on more and more confidence and maybe start to take over some more games than we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I would love to see that. But conversely, I know exactly what you're saying. I remember having several back and forths about someone really, really, really liking Milan Mihalic and me just going back and forth saying, dude, look at the he scored 28 goals. And it's like, okay, let's go and look at those. You know, in 16 of them, over half of them were, you know, when the Sharks were already up 4-0 with 5 minutes left. I mean, they weren't key goals. So, you know, a goal is a goal, but I can see it from both sides. Anyway, Sharks versus LA, of course, 0-3 on the power play, 3-4 on the PK. The Sharks in this one did appear to change their power play up a little bit during their first one, and then it went right back to normal for the next two opportunities. Go figure. So there's the last four games that have been played since we last spoke with you. So, of course, we now move on to Shark Bites. You know, you guys are going to believe this. We got some feedback on the Twitter machine.
Wait, what?
On the Twitter machine. What? Yes.
What? 31 episodes in?
Right. And so from @Ramses on Twitter has a couple questions. Maybe one question, more of a comment. I don't know. You make the call. So I will start with you, Miss Backhander. Regarding excitement, Ramsey says there's a lack of enthusiasm around the franchise in San Jose. Or is there a lack of, like, just kind of asking, and that LA had a full house last night, even though some had pointed out that LA looked empty. Ramsey's kind of, I mean, that's a good name for him on Twitter because he kind of rambled. But but I think just kind of saying, is there a lack of enthusiasm around the franchise at all in San Jose? I would say based on what I'm seeing when I'm at games, and I've gone to half of the home games so far, unfortunately, I'm not gonna BS you people. There's a significant amount of empty seats so far in the games that I've gone to, and you can see it on TV. So maybe there is a lack of enthusiasm, Rocket. I don't know.
I think there's this thing called pricing yourself out of the market, and I think that's kind of what's happening with Bay Area sports across the map, in soccer, in baseball, in basketball, in football. This is a combination of the on-field, on-court, on-ice product and the current state of housing, because nobody, it's like when Schwarzenegger was had to be voted in on that special election because
Gray Davis.
Because Gray Davis quadrupled everybody's DMV registrations in order to try to balance the budget. And
looking back on that, right. Gray Davis had the right thing. Yeah, he was actually right.
But he won't go there. So, and then gas was like $4 a gallon, and it was murdering everybody because California is a huge commuter state, because it's a literally huge state. So everybody, all of a sudden, all of their free money, all of their normal money, their cigarette money, their gum money, their McDonald's money was going into their gas tank. Yeah. So now it's all of their. We're gonna go out and pregame downtown, and we're gonna go to a Sharks game. We're gonna have a couple of drinks there. You know, have a good night out, whatever. All of that money is going towards paying rent now. Like, it's just not feasible for people in the Bay Area, for normal working people, for blue collar single ticket purchasers to do that. So it's like you got that 1% money, that all that high tech money that can still do that kind of stuff. But when you've got the basketball team and the baseball team in San Francisco and this team out here to choose from, you get kind of picky with your money, you know? So it's both a thing and also a California thing. Having said that, I have watched games across North America, NHL games across North America, and I have noticed that there is a significant thinning of the audience throughout. It's not just California, but California does seem to be more noticeable. And I think, like I said, because of the economy.
And just to piggyback onto that, the thing that I do think is unfortunate as well, and now this is not something that I agree with. In fact, I am furiously opposed to this mindset. But I think, unfortunately, and if I'm out of school here, somebody stop me. But I think that a lot of Bay Area sports fans are championship chasers. And because the Sharks, who, yes, have not won a championship in 27 years, but have also had some good teams in those 27 years, because they have not won a championship, I'm not going to insinuate any specific groups, but the general fan base believes that they are owed something by the team. And because they're not getting that, they don't want to participate in the fun that is going to a game, cheering for a team. Now, speaking as somebody who's been alive for about as much time as the team has been around, I would love to see a championship. But they could be the worst team in the league, and I'm still going to watch. I'm still going to go to games. And I hate the idea that a team from a completely different sport is more successful in terms of championships, so you could just give up on your original team.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that, 100%.
let me address a couple of things. First off, the Sharks in the first 8 home games, they did claim that 5 of those were in fact sold out, and I was at 3 of those 5, and they could have technically been sold out. There's every reason to believe that for some reason a row of 8 seats that went completely unused during a game, those seats were in fact paid for, and maybe it was supposed to be for somebody's birthday or something, and maybe
it
something
was mine.
Right?
I paid for those. Yep, it was mine.
And so those seats, while they were sold, did not get used. And there is a difference between tickets sold and tickets scanned. Addressing Hockey Jerk, yes, I do believe, in fact, that there is a decent amount of champ chasers in the Bay Area. I also think part of that has to do with the fact that there are so many newbies to the Bay Area. I mean, new people coming in and out every day, whether it's coming in for work or, you know, I mean, it's beautiful weather, and it could be very much just they come in, if they moved here 3 years ago or 4 years ago, they're like, oh, okay, oh, the Sharks seem to go to the playoffs and do so. Oh, look at this basketball team. They just won a championship. I'm going to go hang out with them, you know? Everybody loves to hang with the cool crowd, and right now the Warriors are unfortunately the cool crowd. Hate to say it, but I think there's a decent amount of enthusiasm around the franchise, but, I mean, let's be honest, it all seems to have begun with the reverse sweep versus LA. There's been a number of unpopular choices that the Sharks have made since then, whether it was not re-signing Drew Remenda, whether it was not re-signing Dan Boyle, whether it was Ice Girls or the BMW Lounge or all of these somewhat cosmetic changes.
The 6 a.m. goal song?
Yeah, there you go. Hey, you know what? There is a decent amount of people that are still pissed that Rock and Roll Part 2 is not the goal song, and they still like to bitch about it on a regular basis. So, but either way, it all kind of started with the reverse sweep, and fans are just going to find a reason to complain. That's just the way it is. So maybe there is a little bit of a lack of enthusiasm, but as Rocket said, in the games that I'm watching, this doesn't seem like it's directly a San Jose problem. This seems to be a little bit of a league-wide problem. So,
and that's a good point you bring up too, because, you know, the Anaheim Ducks, who have, in my estimate, have been the best Pacific Division team over the last 6 years, struggle to sell out their building on a regular basis. And like I said, they have been the best Pacific Division team for this decade, and they can't sell out the building. So Like Rocket,
and they have a cup,
and they have a cup. And so, like you both said, you know, it's happening. It's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
And obviously we're biased because we're from the Bay Area and we have to deal with the Sharks living in the shadow, supposedly, of the Warriors' 2 championships in 3 years.
That's true. And kind of the follow-up question from Ramsey was, Peter DeBoer was evidently speaking about, like, beating LA would be I'm just going to tell you what it says on Twitter, and you can try to circumnavigate what was meant. PDB talked about beating LA to fix that 3-1 trauma. Don't you think it's past now? Now, I believe what Ramsey's is trying to say is to fix the 3-0, #it was 3-0 trauma. And don't you think we should all be past that by now? Yes, I completely agree. I think we all should have, like, gotten on with our lives. But, I don't think winning game... What was the one against LA? What was that, about game, like, 14? Oh, no, there were 10-6, so game 16. I don't think winning a randomly game 16 in the first couple months of the season means anything to people that are still pissed off about being reverse swept 3 years ago.
And you know what? That reverse sweep, you know when I got over it? October 8th, 2014, when the Sharks beat LA on day one of that next season. Because, yes, they were up 3-0 and lost the series. But as all three of us hockey fans know, it's just as easy to win 3 games in a row as it is to lose 3 games in a row. If the Sharks win,
it's a little easier to lose 3 games in a row.
It is a little, but my point is that, you know, we see streaks like this all the time. Granted, a playoff series against the team like the Los Angeles Kings is different. However, I just even if the Sharks won that series, I have a hard time believing they would have gone any further. Yeah. So it was 3 years ago.
Let it
move
go.
On.
Yeah, let it go. And then just real quickly, Rock, don't want to spend all day on this, but we're also asking this question. Are the Sharks becoming a boring defensive first team like we used to make fun of, especially like, say, a la Dallas?
Oh, this is a tough one.
I mean, if you think about it right now, I mean, they're number two in the circle. They're right. number two defense in the league.
Right. And this is so funny because 2 short years ago, we were all clamoring that we had scoring out the wazoo, but our defensive depth was completely lacking or, in essence, again, missing entirely.
Overcorrection.
Yeah. I don't know, because you can't say that, because that would imply that the rest of the league has remained static. And you look at the changes that other teams have made, and there has been an overall shift, I think, in the league. I think that Pittsburgh picking up Ryan Reeves and Antti Niemi was an interesting direction. We can see how well that's panned out for them so far. Everybody's looking for a little bit more balance. And this was a tough year because they lost a couple. Well, they lost Patty, and their hot fire scores just are not producing. So it's not that they're building a defensive team. It's just their secondary production has been crap this year. I'm not even going to try to sugarcoat that.
See, I flipped that a little bit, where I think the primary offensive weapons that we're so accustomed to have actually gone away. And one of the reasons why we seem to be more focused on defense. I mean, Brent Burns, I mean, biggest defensive scorer last year, does not have a goal. Thornton barely has any points so far this season and is now playing less and less. Pavelski, I would think most people would think Pavelski would probably have another 4 or 5 goals, probably 3, 4, or maybe all 5 of those coming on the power play from those awesome tip shots that he usually gets. So it's going to be interesting to see the evolution of this team. And speaking of which, because the Sharks have scored 1 power play goal in their last 20 chances.
Well, and this, you know, this is something new. Historically, no matter what it is, the Sharks refuse to admit when they're at fault. And we've seen this with the power play. We've seen this with scoring, defense.
We've seen this in the White House. I mean, they're
like the worst boyfriend ever. They just deny everything.
Exactly. Like, so much is made about, you know, so much is made about how the Sharks' power play is not getting it done. And last year, it was how the Sharks' 5-versus-5 play is not getting it done.
Well, it wasn't.
That's what I'm saying. But then you go on, you know, you go to practice or you look at, like, you know, Periscope or Instagram stories or whatever. And what are they doing at practice? Working on tips, working on shooting from the point through a body. Like,
I'm getting real tired of that.
And don't get me wrong. Joe Pavelski is my favorite player on the team. Has been for almost 10 years.
Oh, sure.
But I have not seen him shoot the puck probably since the Stanley Cup series. And he's got a very underrated slap shot. And it's just frustrating because, yes, he's the best player at deflections in the league. But because of that, he's just like, I don't have to shoot the puck anymore. I'll just get it from Bernsey and tip it. And it's like, you're not doing good, frankly, at what you're supposed to be doing. So maybe you should change it up for different results.
So you think that they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot or maybe hamstringing themselves a little bit by being so specialized in certain things.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And how many, you know, I know, Rocket, you're still kind of new, but I know AJ can attest to this. How many years were there conversations about how deep the team was, but then the first minute you got into trouble, your top line was stacked and the third and fourth line were benched?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. My God.
And it's the same thing with the goaltending 3 years ago when you have Niemi and Stalock and you go in front of the media and say, we have two number one goalies. That's crap.
You barely have
a number two goalie.
Yeah. Between the two of them.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, it makes me wonder how long PDB's contract was.
His next year is his final year.
Okay. Kind of wish it would have been a 3-year deal. You know what I mean? Okay. So we should probably get out of this. It's starting to run a little bit long. So it's time for 3 stars of the week, or what we like to call.
Oh, good for you.
And as always, we start our number 3rd star with Mr. Jerk.
My 3rd star of these last 12 days or however long it's been is Peter DeBoer for providing me with a new reaction gif to add to my folder of Peter DeBoer reaction gifs. I don't know if you've seen his reaction on the bench after Donskoy shootout goal, but he cracked like the biggest like wise smile and I'm sure he made some smart ass comment too.
Oh, dear Lord. My 3rd star, you're not going to believe this, kid. I'm giving my 3rd star to one Mr. Brendan Dillon.
Happy birthday, Brendan.
The dude, I'll be the first to admit, man, when we got this guy, I was like, I was like, literally, oh, thank God, because nobody could be worse than Jason Demers. And I was like, I was wrong. I'm like, this guy might be worse than Jason Demers. And when I factored into how much money he was getting, I was just like, oh, dear God, I'd almost rather have Demers back. But I don't know if it was if Schlemko like bequeathed him like his I don't know, his good luck troll doll from last season or something like that. But since Schlemko, Dillon has just continued to get better and better and better. More probably the most consistent defenseman. You know, I'd debate it with somebody. Most consistent defenseman the Sharks have had so far this season. In, you know, again, only 16 games in, but I mean, better to trend up than down. Rocket?
Can I add more fuel to your Brendan Dillon fire?
Bring it.
This time last
You think year, Rocket is going to say, no, I don't want to hear more Brendan Dillon talk.
Yeah.
This time last year, Brendan Dillon and David Schlemko were the number one Corsi 4 pairing in the league, and at this time this year, Brendan Dillon and Tim Head are the number two Corsi 4 pairing in the league. So he's doing something right.
This brought to you by StatGeek.
Who's the number one Corsi pairing?
I don't remember.
All right, well.
Nobody cares.
Your
3rd Rocket?
My 3rd star of the week is going to go to Barkley Goodrow. Yeah. If you don't know why, I can't explain it to you.
I like that. And time for the second star. And mine is going to, you know, surprise, surprise, the penalty kill. It just keeps getting it done, kids. I mean, the power play is abysmal, abhorrent. I mean, just like the biggest tire fire on the planet. But the PK, my God. If it's not number one, and I haven't had the chance to check the stats, like right now, it could have changed. But it has to be top five. I mean, it's just, it's been sick. So the PK, good on you, boys. God love you. Just keep it the hell up, man. In fact, you know what? I was right. Just looked it up. PK number two and number one, the LA Kings. So you got a little work to go. But hey, number two penalty kill in the league. Don't remember the last time the Sharks had that one. Rocket, you're number two.
My number two is going to number 50, the Cobra himself, Chris Tierney.
All righty. And again, if you don't know why, she's not going to explain it to you.
Yep.
Hockey Jerk, you're number two. And when I say that, I'm not saying you're a piece of, you know, I'm saying I would like to hear your number two selection.
My number two is also going to be the Cobra, Chris Tierney, for continually defying the odds. He is our third line center again, and he's looked just fine on that line. I think he's, despite the fact that it hasn't shown up on the score sheet, I think him and Bodker have this very weird bromance kind of thing going on. And you couple that, he, you know, got a couple goals. Obviously, Chris Tierney's experience on the penalty kill is well documented. I just think overall he's had a quiet but very good week nonetheless. And he's, you know, pending RFA, he's got something to prove.
Yeah. And as long as Tierney keeps getting the goals and Bodker doesn't, I'm just saying. And so we move on to our number one, and we start with Rocket.
My number one star is going to go to Timo Meier. And if you don't know why, you're probably not on Timo's team, and I just don't have time for you. So
she doesn't have Timo time for you.
I have all the time for Timo. I have all the Timo time. I don't have time for Timo haters, because this kid came into the franchise with a lot of hopes and expectations placed upon his shoulders. And yeah, he didn't turn into Superman overnight. Big deal. The kid's still really young and he's still developing. I don't want them to rush him. I think he's going to be something really special. I have faith in him. And I think he's going to do great. He's just got to learn. And you can't learn how to play NHL games in practice. Like, you got to play against other NHL goalies, et cetera, et cetera. So this is just, it's on the job training. And I know it's painful as a fan, but it's necessary, I think, for this kid. And I have faith in him, so I'm willing.
Nice. To numero uno, Señor Jerko.
My number one star is going to be Barkley Goodrow.
Yay! Because
that game against the game against the Anaheim Ducks, he had a breakaway and didn't score. And so you think, oh no, back to the AHL, here we go. And then he's like, no, sorry, not happening.
I don't want to go back to those folding chairs.
nice pass to Joel Ward on the game tying goal against the Ducks. And then, you know, even in the game against Los Angeles, had the wherewithal to bank it off Ward's foot at the right time for the eventual game-winning goal in that game. And I haven't even mentioned the fact that he is playing center for the first time ever, I think, and yeah, has looked better than Ryan Carpenter, who we all know I am very much a fan of.
All right. So there you go. And kind of to follow up on all of that, my number one star is just going to the bottom six. I mean, 8 points over the last five games. That they've been, you know, shat upon for a long, long time about never coming through. So to keep it up, kids. Wouldn't it be great if, like, Goodrow was, like, the key that unlocked that fourth line door. I mean, that would just be.
Don't you think if he was, he would have unlocked it by now?
He's slowly unlocking it. I mean, look at how since he's joined the team, the Sharks are the bottom pair or the bottom six guys, especially that fourth line, have all of a sudden become very, very much competitive.
Slowly unlocking. If you stick a screwdriver into an Acura's ignition long enough, you'll start it.
Not only that, but. I'm not an NHL player, but I think it's hard to be successful when you're playing with Andrew Desjardins and John Scott.
Whoa!
That is true. That is true. And I should just follow it up.
We here at Teal Town USA and the San Jose Sharks in no way endorse opening an Acura with a screwdriver.
So with that, we move on from our three stars of the week to Around the Horn. And so we start with your favorite whipping boy and mine, Antti Niemi. I will say it once. I will say it a million times. I was never pro Niemi. I was always anti Niemi. Nemo gets waived yet again by the Florida Panthers after being picked up by the Florida Panthers because he was waived by the Pittsburgh Penguins, and now he has been picked up by the Montreal Canadiens. I am 3 out of 5 on my Niemi bingo card.
Lest we forget that 4 months ago he was bought out by Dallas.
Right. So I guess my question is to you, what team takes him next? Because we know Montreal is going to put him on waivers at some point because they're just waiting for Price to get healthy and their other guys to get it together. So Rocket, what say you? Who is next in the Team Niemi Plays For sweepstakes?
I think that, and this is just going off of current trends, their trends for this year.
Crap, she's going to say Edmonton.
No, I'm saying Vegas. Vegas needs all the goalies this year.
You get all the goalies.
Yep.
Dude, they're like playing Paigao with goalies. Just collect all. Hockey Jerk. Who do you think Niemi plays for next? Wouldn't it be great if it was Dallas? No, go ahead.
I'm not super concerned with who Niemi's going to play with. I think
we're just playing a game, buddy.
I think whoever he ends up on will eventually waive him, so it's not going to matter anyways.
Over under.
Teams or days with the Canadians?
No, I like that. I think that's good. But
days with the Canadians.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Look, can we do both?
I'm going to say 38.
38 days with the Canadians? I'm going to bet the under on that. Rocket, what do you say?
I'm going under.
Yeah, so am I. I'm gonna go with like 26. But total teams for the season, I'm setting the OU at 5.
Yeah, 5. I agree.
Under.
Ooh, okay.
But anyways, I'm more concerned, you know, with how many times that Antti Niemi's been waived, how many teams he's been on. It's probably a very hard season for him to wrap his head around everything, but
I'm sure he can cry into a Stanley Cup.
Well, I'm curious to know what Uncle Niemi thinks about all of this.
Nobody cares.
Clearly that joke went way over your head.
Yeah. It's all good. Nobody cares. We have some trades to announce.
Uncle Niemi.
Auntie Niemi and Uncle Niemi. I get it.
No.
Come on.
So we have some trades to announce. At this point, when does Arizona announce their fire sale? So
never.
Well, we got a couple quick trades that were kind of interesting. Tampa Bay acquired goalie Louis Domingue from the Arizona Coyotes for Michael Layton and former Shark forward, time again.
Also former Coyote forward, time again.
Yeah, so he went back to the Coyotes, right?
Yes.
Okay, I thought so.
Yeah, so, how time again is in the NHL? Like, it almost seems like there's clearly something going on there because they went goalie for goalie, but you had to throw in time again on the deal. It seems like that's like a, you know.
It's clear that he impresses GMs time and time again.
Wow, dude, that was impressive.
Oh man, but are you shocked though, Jerk, that they take Domingue with as well as their? I mean, Tampa Bay's killing everybody. Why do you think the Lightning made this deal aside from getting time again out of their stable.
I think the Arizona Coyotes wanted to move from Domingue, who has an NHL contract but is in the AHL. I think it's very obvious that Antti Raanta is their guy, and I'm fairly certain they traded for Wedgewood from the Devils, I believe, a week or two ago. So it's really just a matter of shedding salary, shedding a roster spot. And, you know, I'm not familiar with the Tucson Roadrunners off the top of my head, but who knows? Maybe they needed another forward, and now they get that in time again.
True that. Another interesting trade. Oilers acquired forward Mike Camilleri from the Kings for Jussi Jokinen. Rocket, ever found a home with the Oilers. He always just seemed to be one of those guys that was constantly kind of the Brendan Dillon of the Oilers, if you will. Just not respected for what he brought. Just, you know, not appreciated. What do you think about this deal?
I have no idea who that is. That's how much he's not appreciated and underrated.
Oh, damn. All right, Jerk, give it to me in 30 seconds.
In 30 seconds. So Jussi Jokinen was being played in a scoring role, even though he's a checking player, and Michael Camilleri was being played in a checking role, even though he's a scoring player. So they swapped.
Boom. Oh, man, look at that.
Hockey, how do you like me now?
Mike dropping it inside of 10 hot seconds. I love that. Finally, the Vegas Golden Knights have finally decided to stop ripping off the San Jose Shark and have evidently introduced the longest, loudest, annoying goal horn that, and evidently the best story about this whole thing goes, is that Vegas wanted to try to get some A-lister to show off the new horn. I mean, we all know, like, Britney Spears, not that I'm saying Britney Spears is A-list, but, you know, she has a residency there. Clearly, Las Vegas has celebrities going in and out of there all the time. So they want to find some A-lister. And Chance, their Gila Monster mascot, said, F all you guys, I'm hitting it. Do we have any opinions on this goal horn whatsoever, Jerk?
I just think it's funny that they stopped stealing the Sharks' goal horn so that they could steal the Avalanche's goal horn.
Is it the Avs' goal horn?
It is, yeah.
Well, I don't. That's fine, because you don't really ever hear that horn anyway, so.
Oh! Did you hear that? That was a mic dropping. So with that, we move on.
And then we pick it up off the floor because it was expensive.
Yeah, that's right. So let's get into it for the next week of games for the Sharks versus the Florida Panthers, the worst team in the East at the time of us having our little discussion. Things change, of course. Versus Boston, who San Jose lost to 2-1 in Beantown last month. Again, I reference you back to our earlier conversation about Hudobin blatantly knocking off the net with zero accountability. And then versus the Ducks again. So I will start with you, Miss Rocket Backhander. How you liking the team to go on over this three-game homestand? And let me also point out, too, kids, that this is, we'll be finishing up eight of the last nine games at home. This has been an unprecedented stand for the Sharks.
Are any of these back-to-backs?
None are back-to-back. I don't even know that. I guess you could call them three. These are all three home because they're all at the Sharks' homes.
No, that wouldn't be a home.
No? Oh, okay. No. Anyway.
All right, so versus Florida. I think they're going to get warm and fuzzies from Michael Haley and James Reimer.
From the 30-second montage that they'll roll. Hold on, I thought there was a... Wait a minute. It's Haley... Mm-hmm. It's Reimer. There is a third. Who was
there?
The
was
third?
A third.
It was Niemi.
Oh, Niemi. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh man, he had to hijack
unless
us.
Unless you count Bob Bugner.
Oh, there you go.
You could. Yeah, we could count Boogie. Why not?
Okay. So come back and save our power play.
So
I'm
I
sorry.
Think
go
it's
ahead.
It's going to be, you know, like what's going to happen is they're both teams are going to warm up together. They're going to play like their little soccer circle, but it's going to be both teams. They're going to get on the ice. They're going to have a great game. I think that the Sharks will win, but it will be close and it'll be a scramble towards the end. It'll be like the first two periods will be controlled and that last period is just going to be crazy. Against Boston, I think Sharks will lose again, probably in overtime. Versus Anaheim, it will be very close, but Sharks will lose.
Rocket, not bringing a whole lot of optimism to this final kind of homestand that we have coming up before they go on the road for a couple, including their very first ever game versus Chance and the Golden Knights. So, Hockey Jerk versus Florida versus Boston versus Anaheim, what say you?
Versus Florida, they're going to win 3-0.
SOB, that's exactly what I have written in my book.
Boston, they're going to win 7-4.
Whoa. Oh, man. We're pulling that golden nugget out again.
Who is going to light the lamp that many times?
Timo Meier.
with that rooster trick.
Boston currently does not have Ryan Spooner, David Backes, David Krejci, or Brad Marchand, who are all fixtures of their top six.
I believe it's pronounced Boston, but okay.
Sure. So they're going to lose 7-4 because, you know, Tim Schaller and, you know, Joe Josephson and all their other random bottom six guys are going to score hat tricks. And then and then against Anaheim, they're going to lose 1-0 in overtime.
I've got like penciled in like 2-0, 3-0 win versus Florida. I've got a 2-1 win versus Boston, and versus Anaheim, yeah, I'm kind of like looking at a 2-1 loss. Actually, it wouldn't surprise me if the Sharks lose an overtimer in the shootout versus Anaheim. So there you go, kids. If you're playing at home, please, this is an exhibition. No wagering, please. Hockey Jerk, can I have your final thoughts and where the people can find you on the social media platforms?
Oh, final thoughts. Mikhail Bodker is letting me down, but I'm still a believer.
Not me.
There's still plenty of time. He only needs 18 more goals to get to 20.
What happened to 25?
We never said 25.
Let me grab up my Twitter screenshots. Twitter's a hell of a drug, bro.
The Sharks are doing good. I would like to see them score more, which goes without saying, as scoring goals, it must be always. But the defense is locked down. The goaltending's locked down. The penalty kill's locked down. So if the Sharks can find some more offense in their bag of tricks, I think that they'll be able to have an opportunity to get past Vancouver, get past LA, who have kind of been not bad, not struggling, but just slipping a little bit.
What about getting past Vegas?
Vegas still in the top three?
They're number two right now.
It seems like the Pacific Division standings change every time I like wake up in the morning. So
probably do.
It goes to show you how competitive the team is. All these teams are so bad that there's not a clear favorite.
Oh, come on. All right. Where are you at on social media, bro?
You can follow me on Twitter at @hockey_jerk. You cannot follow me on any other social medias because I spend too much time on Twitter as it is. Like a tweet. It'll make me smile. AJ?
Rocket, your final thoughts and where the people can find you on the social media networks.
My final thoughts. Okay. Hi, kids. Hi. This is your old aunt babysitter, Rocket, here. My final thoughts are, hey, you know what? This is a good team. This is a good experience, I think. We're still building off of that Stanley Cup championship visit. I really feel like we're still there. Like, I don't feel like this is a rebuild team or a team that's on the edge of being too old or too slow for anything. I really do still feel like they have that taste in their memory and they're still after it. But playoffs are going to handle themselves. This is just an 82-game regular season that we're all just watching like Game of Thrones, just without the dragons. My name is Rocket Backhander, and you can find me at Twitter, @RB, little @Backhander76. I talk, and I think I have 280 characters now. I don't know why they gave that to me, but that's cool. And, you know, I GIF and I talk about general weird things happening in Tennessee, which is where I live now. Or you can check out some photographs that I'm taking for myself now on Instagram, Rocket Backhander, one word. I don't care if it's capitalized or lowercase, although they might. And yeah, don't slide into my DMs, but you can try doing the worm into them. Some kind of breakdancing move.
Hey now. Yes, 280 characters now, people. Unless you're from Southern California, then it's the 280 characters. my final thought, of course, is hey, my power play drum rain dance chant. Let's bring the power play rain, kids. As always, you can find me on the Twitter and Instagram at AJ_Strong. If you like the show, do us a favor and follow us at Pucknologist on the Twitter machine. Give us a thumbs up, a like, subscribe. That would be kind of cool. You can do it on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or TuneIn Radio. We might even be on iHeart. We might even be on some platforms. I'm not even sure. And in fact, you know what? Do us a favor. If you're listening to this on a platform that I didn't just name, let us know, because that could be cool. So follow us on Twitter. Slide into our DMs at Pucknologist. Thanks for listening to Show 31. We'll be back next time for Show 32, or what we like to call Like Wall.